At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour, call it hour and a half, too. I don't know what you do when we split it in. You can't call it hour two. We're too far into hour two. It's like when you stop wishing people Happy New Year. there's like an unofficial, designation. Chris Griffin joining us from Sam Houston, and one of several of the ovals around the country that was so impacted by the winter storms and the just insane cold for the region. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you.
How'd you make out personally, you know, for your home and such? You do okay?
Yeah, you know, I was okay. It was probably about 36 hours without power. You know, didn't have water quite a bit longer, but, you know, got through it. The cold wasn't so much the thing. I mean, obviously it was cold. I've dealt with cold, but, you know, when you're talking a no power and a no water situation, obviously that becomes a little bit of a different ball game. So it was tough Monday and Tuesday. Monday was a really rough day. Tuesday, things started to improve a little bit, and then slowly the weather started to get a little better, a little bit of freezing, and, you know, I love my dog, but my dog never sleeps next to me on that Monday. He slept on top of me. So it's,
it was, that's great
that he was dealing with the conditions as well, because he was, he would not leave my side. So that was, maybe that's a positive out of all of that, that stuff. But, the other positive is we're back to racing. You know, we got through it, and, credit again to the horsemen and the people that were working hard. It was tough. It was definitely tough, but nobody was had a lack of effort. I mean, everybody was trying to do what they could to get things back up and going, and we had to cancel last week, but we're back at it. So some nice racing this week, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, and last week I did take the opportunity under the, you know, under the conditions, we touched base with Frank Hopf, and you know, got a status report, and it, you know, unfortunately was taking away from, you know, what should have been a real celebratory week. And, you know, with the resumption of the meet here, we'll, you know, we can, you know, take those victory laps, because of course, handle has been so good that, it's affected a purse increase, and, you know, a reminder, and, you know, at the same time, you're working into, you know, make up for those races. And you can tell by the, you know, by the 12 race card, for instance, that, you know, that's part of the, you know, that's part of the effort to fill in the gaps that, you know, that were lost here over the, how many cards? I think, six cards.
What was that question, Steve? Sorry.
How many cards were lost?
We lost, one, two, three. We lost four. I mean, we lost
four.
The entire
okay.
week. We had canceled earlier, had kind of those issues the prior week. But, yeah, we lost four cards. We lost the entire week and lost preview day. But didn't lose it. We brought it right back. So, you know, we did run. We ran 12 yesterday. We're running 12 today. 10 on Friday and then another 12 on Saturday. And then we'll kind of take a look and see just kind of how entries go into next week, because we draw a week out, so we're already
right
taking entries for next Thursday, and so we'll see how many races can fill there, because, you know, again, it's such a changing situation, just with the horses missing a little bit of time on the racetrack, and you know, trying to make sure that they're in race shape and get them back on. You know, it was 4 or 5 days, but for them to enter and find the right spots, it's just going to take some time. But the boosted purse money helps. You know, when you get 7,000 in added dirt purses and 2,000 on the turf, then you get some of these bigger field sizes and some nice wagering opportunities, no doubt.
Well, the one of the key wagering elements that we've been discussing, you know, since the start of the meet with the Space City pick five and the opportunity there to, you know, to carry without without a jackpot. There is also the building jackpot on the high five. But for our conversations, we've been, you know, more focused on the pick six. And, you know, then once you handicap those six races, it gives you reason to play the pick five and the pick four as well. And this first card actually got some nice play, and you end up with 11,000. Well, 11,000, I think, coming in. Is that 11,000 into today's card? And you know, really, I'm a little surprised. I guess that 11-1 in the nightcap yesterday, the Larry Stroop winner, 25-20.
I think you look at some of the morning line prices. I mean, there were a lot of mid range prices. You didn't have any overwhelming favorites. You know, you had a couple that when Texas Crossbow scratched, that was 6-5 on the morning line, so it was kind of hard to pinpoint kind of where favoritism would go in that race. Leander Gonsalves had an incredible night last night for jockeys, and J.R. Caldwell won 3, and you just kind of had some of these horses. I thought Gray Zone was another price mixed in there. Sarah Davidson's runner went off at around 9-1, Danny Sorensen aboard, and that one I think created some separation as well. The pick five came back over $40,000. So, you know, somebody did connect on the pick five, but just didn't put it together in pick six. But the other thing to remember is we have an early pick six and a late pick six. So the carryover actually starts in race number one. So those folks that look at pick six plays, it starts in the lid lifter right there in race number one when we kick things off at 4 o'clock. So just keep that in mind. And it looks like a pretty heavy favorite actually in the first leg. But other than that, you could maybe find some value in there. I'm not entirely sure it'll carry over after the first early Space City pick six, just looking at the sequence, but you never know. That's why they run the races, Steve.
Well, and I suppose that the challenging part of the sequence is going to come with those two maiden specials that end it, the fifth and the sixth.
Yeah, and I do. I actually like a big long shot in that maiden event. Fantastic, like I say, it's going to be real tough to handle in that first leg. So a single on a lot of tickets. Now, if Fantastic doesn't win, then that changes everything pretty significantly. But there is a horse in there. I think race number six, I think it definitely is going to be one of those first-time starters. It just looks like there's a lot of talent in that open maiden special weight race. And again, at a $43,000 purse, you're going to see some of these different barns come in. You know, Tom Amos is sending a first-time starter by Spitzer, $130,000 purchase price, 7-2 on the morning line. So an Into Mischief runner there for $155,000 for Steve Asmussen. So there's definitely some opportunities to look at a first-time starter in race six. I'll tell you what, though, in race five, Flying Sexy, if you go back and watch that horse's replay, the horse didn't run too poorly there during Houston Racing Festival in that main race. I know the barn likes this one a little bit, and, you know, you're going to get 15-1 in the morning line. I do think Rush the Colors looks like a nice favorite in there, but I think a beatable favorite as well. Alfredo Contreras gets back up, and the horse was wide, kind of broke slow, got squeezed a little bit at the start, then was real wide around the turn, but actually closed okay. And then, you know, if you trust gallop outs and whatnot, the horse galloped out real nice as well. So I'm going to go back there. The number 11 Flying Sexy, I think, offers a ton of value. So if you wanted to get some of that separation in the pick six, if you can get the 11 home there in race number five, I think that's an interesting one to have.
Nice. That group are Texas-bred maidens going three quarters. There's that six that closes out the first half of the card and that early portion of the pick six. Both of the Calhouns on the inside, the first are that Fashion Rage and Lovely Ride, who's coming back for a second start, Lindy Wade and Rye Eichelberry aboard for Calhoun. Both of them, I think, have got, looking at sibling strength, that they've got, you know, plenty that would recommend them. You mentioned Amos with Lane Luzzi, Greatest Love, and there is the same thing. There's some pedigree strength. you know, the Gustafson, even the score filly, is a half to Jim Antier, who was a nice stakes mare or colt. I'm trying to place that. I'm trying to place his name, but and he didn't debut until he was three, but was a nice horse. He's got to be, yeah, he'd be a 6 year old now, but I think he's gone. But that's a sibling that has got a little bit of power. When you end a pick six with two maiden specials, you're asking, yeah, you're inviting trouble. Any other thoughts? You know, you mentioned the opener, and the 3-5 shot. So, you know, maybe people turn it into a pick five with their approach, and the second, third, and fourth legs, they all have got formful scenarios involved. Texas Bred's going short. 5,000 non-winners of two lifetime, then 25 non-2 filly and mares, turf sprinting, and then back on the main for three-year-old fillies going 5.5, 25 non-2. So you do have, you know, real form to go on with that second, third, and fourth leg.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, when Amos is sending runners over, you've pretty much got to take a look at them and include them. And so in race number four, Reason Why, another one that stands out, stands off the pages a little bit. Hello Bubbles is another favorite coming in from the West Coast that I felt like was actually a little bit beatable here in this spot. I like Mom's Pass, but I think you could spread a little bit in race number three. And race number two, Silver and Aces does look really tough. I mean, On the Honor Roll is 9-5 on the morning line. It should probably go off favorite just because it seems like the numbers have been consistent enough to win, but that's going to be a short price against a horse like Silver and Aces that I think has every right to improve. So, you know, if you get around Fantastic and you single Silver and Aces or something like that, I think you have some value in there. I think if you go, you know, favorite in the first two legs, you know, are you really attacking this pick six and really trying to make a score? And maybe you just have to do that. Maybe that's just kind of the way that it has to work. But it's hard for me to get away from Austin Gustafson in an eight-horse field where it just seems like he's going to have a runner that has every right to improve and a jockey that's getting aboard that he has connected well with. You know, when Ezekiel Lara gets up for him, good things have happened. And then you also notice Leonardo Gonsalves is on Mom's Pass. Stuart Elliott's actually serving a few days. So he got some days, and so that's why he's not listed on these Asmussen horses, if anybody out there is wondering. He will be riding the stakes, though, on Saturday during Texas Preview Day. Because that wasn't redrawn, he was given permission to ride in the stakes on Saturday. So just kind of a little tidbit there for folks that are wondering about where's Stuart Elliott. That's what he's doing right now.
You mentioned Gonsalves. My man Tom Herman wanted to remind five winners for Gonsalves yesterday.
Five winners. I mean, the guy was just in an absolute zone, and he wasn't doing it on 4-5 shots either. I mean, he had prices, he had mid-range horses. He was just sitting the right trips. You just see, you know, and the listening audience knows, and the betting audience knows when a jockey is just kind of feeling it. They just seem to make all the right decisions, and he just really was. Jack's Advantage was probably the best example of that. It looked like an interesting race, and he just got to the front. He slowed it down. He kind of said, you know, let me back off the pace. Everybody kind of bunched up in behind, and somehow he found enough through the lane to get that horse's nose down right there at the wire. You know, Bandit Swanson had a ton of trouble in that race. It probably was best, but Leandro was just pushing all the right buttons last night, and things were going well. And you could see it. J.R. Caldwell was giving him some real nice encouragement when he was coming back to the winner's circle. They won three together last night, but again, just making the right decisions, putting the horses in the right spot, and just was on fire last night. You just couldn't contain him, and when you win five, it's always got to be a good feeling. I'm sure the agent was happy and the connections, and Leandro, he might have a nice weekend, because again, he gets on more Asmussen horses throughout this week.
You know, it's funny, at Saratoga over the years, we had the barbecue, and my partner Barry, you know, he'll put a bet in, but he's not following things closely. And John Velasquez won, I think, three of the first four one day at Saratoga. And, you know, I think Barry heard Durkin say that's the third win of the day for Johnny V in the first four mounts. And so Barry said to me, he said, you always bet a streak. And he said, how many more does Johnny have? I said, he's got four more mounts. He goes, okay. He said, let's go bet him. So Barry, basically he didn't parlay, but he put, I don't even know what he put, 20, I think 20 down to win on the rest of Johnny's mounts. And Johnny ended up winning three more. And that's always stayed with me. And there was also the day at Saratoga where Ramon won six. So when you see somebody go on those kinds of streaks, you get an inkling early, go ahead and bet them. It's a funny phenomenon. Yeah.
The fun part about that is always, when it's not somebody that comes to the racetrack often, they probably look at you and they're like, this is easy.
Exactly.
You
easy game.
All these things and all these numbers and notes. And all I'm doing is picking the streaky rider, and I'm winning three out of four. I mean, this is an easy game. So
exactly.
Hopefully that makes them come back, though. That's the best part.
Well, and then, of course, there's so many rules like that when it comes to, you bring a date to the racetrack.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever she wants to bet, don't try to talk her out of it, and particularly her first bet. If she says, I want that one, I want the four, you just go bet it because it's going to win, period. It's some sort of cosmic force. I don't ask me to explain it, but we've all experienced it. And before we talk about the stakes card, Chris Griffin with us from Sam Houston, anything else on the late half of the card that stands out to you?
I really like Quinella. I think, am I looking at the right day? I might be looking at Friday's race.
I got Friday's race too here.
Yeah, let me pull this up.
Quinella's, she's in, that's in the ninth tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. Quinella in the ninth tomorrow is an absolute standout for me. I feel like in that race, there's just not a lot of speed. It's kind of coming back right around the same class level. And I felt like, when you're looking for a horse that you can just pinpoint, you feel like in a bigger field like that, that you can kind of single out and take a look at and feel a real strong feeling on the horse, this is the one. I think that there's just not a lot of speed in the race. I think it looks like there's going to be quite a few that are going to be coming off the pace. I think Floyd Wethy Jr. is going to put this one in the right spot. Yeah, dropping from 15-3 down to 5,003. So, did finish behind Salacious Accusation, but I think you'll get all that 4-1. I think Quinella is going to be set up for a big effort. So that'll be tomorrow. Yeah, that's one that I'd be looking at there in race number 9. Later on the card tonight, who was I taking a look at in here? There's just so many nice races. Colescent is going to be a short price there in race 10. But if you go back and watch replays, when this horse went to two turns, she's a 3-year-old filly by Super Saver. She looked like she wanted every bit of the two turns. She's a big filly. She's not tiny. And Danny Pish finally got her around two turns, and she just really relished it. She's 9-5 on the morning line, or 8-5 on the morning line. So, morning line maker believes in her quite a bit as well, based on that last number. I guess maybe you kind of start thinking, is she going to kind of bounce a little bit off that effort? Athleton's got two runners towards the outside. Maybe that's an interesting one, but I think Colescent is kind of a standout. Not a big price, 8-5, but one that I think will be very tough there in the late sequence. And you just have to see. Maybe the pick six does carry over and goes into that late pick six. But remember, the carryovers just continue to roll over. So it's not a jackpot situation. But if there is a carryover, it just goes right into the next sequence. So if you missed on that early Space City pick six and there's a carryover, it goes right into the late Space City pick six because we got 12 races.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The increment makes it interesting, the 50 cents. It makes it tricky to build tickets, and that's why we're getting the carryovers. And of course, with the double card, there's no linchpin race that kills you. Races that overlap on both sides on a smaller slate. So it's the first through the sixth, and then the seventh through the 12th. So it's kind of a unique thing for a few days here.
It is, yeah. You've got that here the next 2 days, and then it'll change on Saturday. We go back to 10 races on Friday night. Looks like we drew 10 races for Wednesday. So, yeah, when you see those 12 race cards, now we know kind of what we'll be looking at. And a lot of handicappers, Trey Stiles, who's my co-host on Sharpie Time, he does not like the overlap fours and pick fives. Because, like you say, you can kind of get burned on both tickets depending on some of those legs. So, it's nice to separate them and lots of opportunities. I think some people even asked about a middle pick four. I'll have to talk to Frank Hoff in the racing office about that, because if you get 12 races, you could do
some
pick four sequences. But they've got plenty on their plate, and he's given us plenty of wagering opportunities. But we'll see. Maybe we can get one more. You never know.
Well, let's talk a few minutes before we go about Saturday's card and the opportunity to I'll probably get a couple of ideas from Nick Tamaro as well on Friday. But things start the stakes sequence that was delayed. The first of them starts in race six, the two Altozzano, and then goes through Bourbonnet, the Miss Bourbonnet, the H-Town.
Miss Bluebonnet.
The Bluebonnet, what do I call it?
Yeah.
I called her Bourbonnet. That's a different track.
Different
racetrack. The H-Town and the Houston Turf, as well as the Jim's Orbit. Walk us through a little bit some ideas on the stake sequence.
Yeah, so race number six kicks it off. The two Altozzano, you know, Star of the North. If you see her in the flesh, she's just such an impressive filly to look at. She looks like she's got room to grow. She is three for her last three, and she's got so many options because this is part of the Texas Stallion series. So even though she's a Minnesota bred, she's still eligible to run in this race because she's by the sire, the Texas Stallion, the Hunk. So she's able to win some state bred races there in Minnesota. And then she's also able to come over here for the Texas Stallion Series, and she's also able to win here. So she's got so many opportunities for Francisco Bravo. She did absolutely nothing wrong. She broke from the rail there in the Texas Stallions at that 75,000. She's coming right back here. I just think she looks too tough. I think that you're going to have to see a lot of improvement from any one of these runners here to catch her, because she's already pretty much handled all of them, except for That's a Lot of Bling. So they're really going to have to pick it up. She's going to be a short price, and she looks extremely tough. I mean, if there is a favorite that you're really going to kind of hone in on, I think she's the one. The Miss Bluebonnet, bit of more of a wide-open turf race, you know, at the mile. I think there's some barns that are taking a shot. She's our fastest, comes back in there, and from a class standpoint, she's so classy. But her turf form hasn't been exactly the same, especially against some of the other runners. And she's probably actually going to be a shorter price than horses that are finishing front of her on the turf. So I think that's an interesting one to kind of take a look at. Watch her on the board, because I think there is going to be money that goes her way. She's 4-1 in the morning line. I'm playing against her. I actually like Miss Perfecta. I think she's been, you know, 5-7 at the distance. She really loves turf. And, you know, again, another shipper that's coming in that has been kind of around the country, but I think she fits in the right spot. The H-Town looks like it could be interesting to see where Can I Bob decides to go, but Direct Dial is going to be very tough in there. Stuart Elliott, you know, he'll be chomping at the bit there for Steve Asmussen, for just a horse that has been run through the Texas ranks, state bred ranks, and really made a nice career and a living doing just that. Race 9, I really wanted to pick John Doe, but I'm going to give Redditori one more shot. I think that the Houston Turf is probably one of those nice, classier races that we're seeing at a mile and 16th on the grass. I'm going to give Redditori one more shot. I think he looks good. I went over to his barn. I took a look at him there for trainer Alan Dupuy, and he talked about the horse and felt like, you know, he had given the horse some time off, and the horse wasn't really doing too well there at Remington Park, and had that comeback race, and he felt like the horse got a lot out of it. He's a 6-year-old gelding now, horse of the year, you know, Texas bred horse of the year. So it's interesting to point out, but Sunlit Song is definitely the now horse. I just don't like the price. I think Sunlit Song is going to be a real short price in that race. And if Redditori is the Redditori of old, at 4-1, I think offers more value in that race. So from a wagering standpoint, I'll go in that direction. John Doe, though, John Doe at 15-1 is very enticing. I think that I'm not sure what happened last time. He was odds on, and he did not run very well. But I think he's a better racehorse than that. And I think that's one to keep an eye on because he does have some late kick on the turf. I think into this little bit bigger field size, I think kind of things can set up. He's tackling some horses, though, that are multiple winners, so that's going to be his biggest challenge in that race. But he's got a shot. And then closing things out there in the Jim's Orbit, I'm going to play against Carbon Striker. I actually like Island Sun. I think Island Sun will improve off that event. Goes back to trainer Steve Asmussen and Stuart Elliott aboard. 6-1. Why not go for that one? Carbon Striker is going to have a different trip. He goes to the rail this time. He was outside last time and kind of see all the speed inside and just clear off. I'm not sure he gets the same trip here. He's going to have to really send from the rail, but he does look tough, but I'm going to play against.
I just sent a text to Brett Calhoun because I'm curious what he's going to do, which race he's going with He's a Suitor.
He's a Suitor, yeah.
Whether he's going to try the grass. I think he's interesting. And, you know, coming back against Texas Bred Company off the open performance.
And Good Scout came back and won yesterday. I mean, Good Scout drew off and won by
There you go.
So the form of that allowance event at 6.5 comes back strong. So, you know, maybe Brett Calhoun watches that and says, oh, well, Good Scout, you know, won pretty easy there. You know, who knows? But, yeah, looks strong in that spot at 9-2, Shane LaViolette. I like the post. Probably got a lot out of that and got behind a horse that was a runaway winner yesterday. So maybe we've talked ourselves right into it if that horse goes in the H-Town, 75,000, 7 furlong.
Well, and Brett's just saying interesting. He's saying they're kind of watching the weather, and I hadn't thought about this, but Saturday, any chance of if Brett's concerned about it, that that kind of gives you an indication that, you know, he thinks it could come off the H-Town.
If this continues, Steve, I'm going to change my middle name to Weather, I think, with everything that's been going on. But, yeah, so there is some rain. There's a little bit of rain in the forecast, I think, into this afternoon. But it keeps saying about 50%, 40%. As far as tomorrow, again, it's showing a little bit of rain in the morning, around 6 a.m. into about 10 a.m., 11 a.m. We don't run until 6:45 at night. So it's really going to probably depend on the rain from Friday morning, the end of Friday morning, and how long that's going to continue into Friday evening. Saturday actually looks clear, and then it looks like some rain comes back on Sunday. So maybe we get a little bit of a window in there on Saturday for the rain to clear out, but it's a fair assessment. I think keeping an eye on the weather is what we got to do these days. And so if it does rain, we'll see, but turf course was run on yesterday. It was firm yesterday with the turf rail at 0 feet. And I would imagine that we will be good to go, and depending on the conditions. It depends on how much rain falls, too. Right now it's clear skies, and we'll just have to kind of take a wait-and-see approach, as I'm sure some of the trainers are doing, you know, like you just texted right now, to find out. So.
Well, I appreciate the quick turnaround from Brett. And I also, you know, it's funny when you see a name, and of course, Coen Brother fans of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou are smiling with the line, He's a Suitor. That's very cool. And give you an opportunity. I don't know how, can you play around much on the mic with those?
No, not really.
He's a Suitor into the winner's circle. You got to come back with a bona fide. You got to tie a bona fide in there.
The turnaround time was impressive. Brett Calhoun right there live. I like that. Getting some knowledge right away. That's great.
That's one of our fun little, you know, whatever. It drives me nuts, actually, these cross entries, the places that allow the state cross entries. It's a little. I had trouble with this. Where were we the other day? At Fairgrounds, I think. Oh, I think it was Captivating Moon who came up earlier with Chris Block. You know, sometimes when you make a first pass handicapping and there's horses cross entered, you sort of, you know, you say, all right, I'll come back to them when I know where they're running. Then the decision's made, and you've already sort of committed mentally to something else in the race, and the horse that you kind of glossed over, you know, ends up running well, and you're like, ugh, I completely left, the cow was out of the barn for me. So,
yeah, I mean that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. I think it's a fair argument to say that you want to keep an eye on the weather as well, but unless there's an absolute downpour here over the next 48 hours. I imagine that we're going to be pretty good to go. If there's a little bit of moisture and whatnot, you know, we can handle that. And TrackMan's been working on the track, and you know, after last week, just kind of letting the track settle and get through that. You know, they've been hard at work at it, and I think a little bit of rain, a little bit of sun, you know, that would be okay too, to kind of let things grow and get back to normal. So
well,
it is fairly normal Houston weather now, though. It's nice and humid outside, and we are not dealing with those frigid temps right now, that's for sure.
It's the craziest thing ever.
It was
unbelievable. Amazing.
It was something. We appreciate everybody reaching out. It was very kind of everybody to follow along, and it was we were doing what we could. It was definitely a struggle there for a couple of days, though.
Well, great to have Sam Houston Race Park back on the menu and back rolling into this afternoon. 5:02 first post, $11,000 pick six carryover in the Space City. And if nobody negotiates the first six, it'll spin into the second six. And then, of course, the Texas Preview Night card on Saturday. Chris, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk soon. Good luck this week.
You got it. You know, and just as we're getting done with Chris, because I had Brett Calhoun on the line, so I figured, all right, let me ask a couple other things. I said that Firster looks interesting in the sixth race today, and he said he's working great, or she is, Fashion Rage. He said he's not happy about having a run from the rail. So the two of those horses, the 6-1 Fashion Rage and the 8-1 Lovely Ride, they both kind of caught my eye. Just looking at on sibling strength, you know, you look on Thoroughgraph, and you look at siblings and how fast they were. That's really all you have to go on. I mean, first time starter stats and trainer, you know, first and second start stats. But the sibs, you know, and the dam, and you know, they'll give you an indication. So that's what caught my eye, and I don't have the page in front of me right now, but. We may have to swing into action it's a nice card today at Sam Houston. 5:02 Eastern time gets things started. Steve Haskin standing by, and I'm sure Steve has been digging in on the Fountain of Youth field, and we say good morning.
Go ahead, say it.
Good morning. Good morning, Steve Haskin.
Yes, I am digging in. This is a good digging in weekend, and next weekend will be a bigger digging in weekend. So I've got my shovel out ready after an off week last week. Last week is the annual intermission where nothing happens, and I've run out of things to say. So something better happen in these races here for me to have something to write about, because there's not much you can say about these horses after 6 weeks.
Well, there were at least even before Saturday, before the Southwest and the Fountain, which we'll talk about momentarily, there were two horses to at least mention, and some thoughts on the Japanese winner, because it certainly has a pedigree that could translate in North America.
You know, every year, we always see some Japanese horse that we look at and we latch on to. We say, this could be the one. And, of course, it never is. So with that said, I will say La Perouse could be the one.
Right.
If you look at his, not even so much this last race, but even the race before this. But what I really like about this horse, forgetting about his pedigree is obviously fantastic. He's probably grandson of Sunday Silence, and his female family is all class and stamina, American breeding. So forget the fact that he's racing in Japan. I mean, he's got American blood all through him. I don't just mean American blood, but really good, classy American blood with top-class sires and dams all over the place. But with that said, what I like about this horse a lot is his turn. He's got a huge turn of foot.
Mm.
In his last start, he's won both ways, left-handed and right-handed. In his previous start, he just absolutely exploded in the stretch. He just came from nowhere and just blew by horses so quickly. So you say, all right, well, we don't know. Obviously, I don't know what he's beating over there. I love the way he did it. I love his action. I like everything about him. So I said, well, let's see what he does in his Hyacinth Stakes in the big field. And, he just took himself right out of the race. I thought he had no shot to win that race. He was so far back. And, he was stuck behind horses down on the inside, and he was just way, way back. And then when he straightened into the stretch, he just split horses and came up to the inside and, again, showed that turn of foot. I didn't think he was going to get up and catch the horse in front. And he just poured it on at the end and got up to win. And I thought it was very impressive. You can only go so far, as far as being impressed, with a Japanese horse, because you don't know what he's beating and you don't know anything about him. You don't know his trainer, you don't know his jockey, you don't know anything. So I'm going strictly by pedigree, and I'm going strictly by visual. And on both counts, he looks like he could be legitimate if everything works out and he manages to come. You don't want to get too high on a Japanese horse and they say, we're not coming. Or a lot of times the Japanese horse will look good and then he goes into the next, qualifying derby race and doesn't look very good. But I don't expect it, this horse. This horse, I'd like to see him get a little bit closer to the pace, but you got to like his turn of foot and you got to like his pedigree. So with that said, could be an interesting horse to watch.
I thought so too, and I knew you'd have some thoughts. How about some thoughts on yesterday and the latest Into Mischief to consider? Soup and Sandwich, Dave.
I was thinking you might be bringing that horse up. The one thing is that I've always maintained, looking back, as an old fogey that I am, that one of these days we're going to get a horse win the Derby the old school way, the private stable, all class, and I thought we were going to have one with Win Win Win. I really did. I really thought that was going to be the one. And we're talking about obviously about Mrs. Weber, who was on the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame a ballot committee with me, and I just love her on the committee. Every time somebody mentions, a horse, makes a case for a horse, she always chimes in with the exact same words. I agree. she finds the good in everybody, which I love. But this horse, I don't think we've seen anywhere near the tip of the iceberg with this horse. I don't know what this horse can become, but for him to win both of his races the way he did, this horse is so green. He does like everything wrong. He looks around constantly. He's always looking everywhere. He shies at every little thing. In his last race, he just took up after the start, when another horse just started to drift in front of him, and this is a three-horse field, and managed to get himself boxed in. But he just throws his head up in the air and takes up. He's always looking around. He's always looking into the grandstand. After the race, he's looking into the infield, and the jockey can't even get him to turn around because he's always busy looking around. His first start, he didn't change leads until like 30 yards to the wire. He just got stuck on his left lead, and he's just all over the place. And his last start, he doesn't change leads until inside the eighth pole. Then he just props and ducks to the inside, jumps back to his left lead, and in two strides, he's back on his right lead. And I'm saying, yeah, I mean, this horse is like so green, and yet he looks so good because he sits back, and when he takes the lead, he like bursts the lead on his own. I mean, you watch the horses near him, even though, you know, you watch the other horses in the race, and, you know, they're under a whip already on the turn. And this jock, you know, whether it's Ortiz or Gallardo, but, I mean, they're just sitting on him. They don't even move. Next thing you know, he's got a three-length lead. So, you know, I just think he's got tremendous ability. And he hasn't even come close to putting it all together yet. When this horse matures, I don't know how good he could be. It's a fascinating horse. It's very fascinating to watch. He's one of the most interesting horses. If anybody gets a chance to watch his first two races, by the way, especially watch the head-ons and even the pan shots, but he's so totally green. He just does everything wrong and keeps looking good doing it. You know, he wins all by himself. He's under no pressure. The only time a jock hits him is to just keep his mind on the race because he just totally loses focus on things. So that's, you know, that's my take on it. I don't know how his connections feel about it, but in fact, I had texted Mark Cassie, but I didn't hear back from him. But you can't knock the pedigree. He's into mischief. Every time I see a horse, and I said, "Wow, that horse looks good," and I immediately go to the pedigree. Ah, of course, into mischief. What else is new? I mean, they're everywhere. And the horse has got fascinating breeding. He's got a fascinating pedigree.
Yes, he does.
You don't see it too often, by the way. He's in bed to stop the music. People are going to look and say, "Oh, stop the music." You know, that name sounds familiar. I mean, if you like Green Tree, you know, you got Mrs. Weber, who's, you know, old school, you know, just like the old fashioned sportsman, and the horse's female family is all Green Tree. So you got the old fashioned, the old sportsman on the female side, but. Stop the Music. You know, Stop the Music is the sire of Temperance Hill, who's a Jockey Club Gold Cup winner. You know, and obviously, you know, a Travers and a Belmont winner, so I mean, all stamina. And Stop the Music, you know, unfortunately, came along in the same crop as Secretary and Forgo, and spent his entire crop, his entire campaign chasing both those horses. In fact, he finished second to Forgo in a Champagne. He actually got put up, Secretariat in a Champagne and got it put up first. He actually beat Secretariat on disqualification. But he was second to him in the Belmont Futurity, second to him in the Laurel Futurity. He actually finished ahead of Forgo in the Met Miles. It was second and third. But he was second to Forgo in several stakes and third to Forgo in another race in the Brooklyn. I mean, he was just spent his whole career chasing those horses, but. You know, you don't hear too much about him. And the fascinating thing about Stop the Music is that he lived until he was 35.
Wow.
So everything about this horse absolutely fascinates me. I'm totally intrigued with this horse completely. If you get any inside scoops on him from Mrs. Weber, let me know.
Well, it's funny you say scoop, because scoop figures into this conversation. And that's one of the fun things. The dams, you know, basically the second dam here, Scoop. There's some fun things that right away. I mean, you talk about the family. That's a Taffel, Jim Taffel bred Scoop.
Yeah, he was a good filly.
One of the names out of this too that I hope we get a chance. You know, some people will either write about you're a candidate, the late Gene Cilio, who trained Scoop and was a, you know, especially with Arlington in the news, was, you know, a long time, you know, Chicago leading trainer, and whose name you just don't see. And in fact,
right.
Crafty Oak, he trained, you know, the dam of Giant Oak. If I ask Chris, next time I get Chris Block's been on twice already this year. We may have to get Chris Block on at some point. He could tell you about.
I remember Giant Oak. What a big, gorgeous horse he was.
The dam, Crafty Oak, was a Gene Cilio trainee. But Scoop, horse, she made $300,000. She won things like the Indiana Breeders' Cup Oaks.
Yeah, I remember her. She was a nice filly.
She won the National Jockey Club Oaks at Sportsman's Park. How about that? Gotta love that. Won the Flawlessly at Arlington as well. And no grade ones. She tried the Fairgrounds Oaks at three and was off the board. That was real Cozy's win, actually, as it happens. Danny Pites for the Lowe's.
All I know is that, yeah, I look at this crop of horses, you know, and there's a lot of good horses. You know, there's nobody you can really grasp onto. You want to see what these horses can do right now, because right now a lot of them still are unproven. I think there's good depth to it, but I don't know how much quality there is at the very top. Greatest Honor obviously looks like he could be, he could be obviously one of the Derby favorites in there. I think he might be up against it a little bit in the Fountain of Youth, but we'll see. But we'll find out about Essential Quality. And after that, really, you know, you really don't know what we're dealing. Life is Good, I think, could be a total freak. Every time I watch his horses work, I said, oh, my God, this horse. I have not seen a horse move like him since American Pharoah. Really, he's just like the most perfect horse. Just absolute, talk about poetry in motion. Oh, my God, his work's incredible. So, you know, after those three, you look at Keep Me in Mind. I mean, you can't even run them now. They got to wait. Got to wait 8 weeks from where we're supposed to run now in the Rebel. I mean, his whole schedule is totally screwed up. You know, he couldn't run him. He couldn't train him for all those weeks. He missed right. Workouts. He missed gallops. Couldn't do anything with him. So I even commented last week. I said, I don't know what's going to happen with this horse. I think he's going to go into this race with no training at all. You know, you look at a horse like Caddo River, who was the other really good three-year-old stable there, and the first thing he did was just skedaddle out of town and headed and, you know, went to Brad Cox's barn at Fairgrounds and worked a bullet in 59-3. So he was able to do that. And the other Southwest horses are already stabled at Fairgrounds. So he's stuck at Oaklawn, and he had absolutely nothing to do with him. I mean, he had no choice but to wait. So now he's got to wait another 4 weeks for the Rebel. And this horse was ready to run three weeks ago. He was working bullets at Oaklawn. Now you got to keep him going. You know, it's not like you were planning it. So you take it easy. You gradually work up to your first start if you want to make your debut in the Rebel. But that wasn't the plan at all. He was ready to run over a month ago. So you just don't know with these horses. You know, the Fairgrounds horses are solid, but they don't blow you away. Bandalone looks like a really good horse, but I don't know. I don't know how good he's. Again, he's not. The three horses are on the wire together in every race between him, Midnight Bourbon, and Proxy. So it's hard to separate them. So I'm just looking for somebody that's just really, really interesting and fascinating. And this horse is that horse. I just love watching him run because I just know what the potential is. I don't even think we've come even close to seeing it.
Well, let's. You mentioned Greatest Honor and a couple of others. Let's turn our attention with those two, non-immediate. Horses covered. Let's talk about the Southwest and the Fountain of Youth. Start with the Fountain, Steve.
Okay, well, the one thing I'll say about both races, by the way, that there's a very good chance that both races are going to be won wire-to-wire by a son of McLean's Music, which will completely throw the Derby picture upside down, because I'm not going to know what to do then, because I don't think either one of those horses are going to be are like Derby horses. So, you know, if that happens, If Drain the Clock wins Wire to Wire and Jackie's Warrior wins Wire to Wire, say, well, where are we now? I mean, I don't know. Do we take it? Is that a step forward? Did we see a Derby winner there? I don't know. So it's those both these races are kind of tricky. But, you know, Drain the Clock draws the rail, which is going to obviously help him with his speed. And to me, the key to the race is whether Prime Factor, who is right outside of him, is going to run with him. You know, he's the only other horse with sprint speed. You know, he went 45-1, just like Drain the Clock did. He went 45-1 in his first start, and Drain the Clock went 45-1 in the Swale. So they both have sprint speed. And, you know, Prime Factor got that two-turn race. And you saw what can happen, by the way, when a brilliant first-out maiden winner is thrown into a stakes around two turns. He was rubber-legged by the time he hit the quarter pole, and he got beat badly by Greatest Honor. But he obviously needed the race. He's got that race in him now. And the question is, what do you do with him? Are you going to ride him like a Derby horse, or are you going to ride to try and win this race and sit off of Drain the Clock and not let him get a five-length lead, which he could easily do in this race, breaking from the rail? So that's the key right there. The key will be a Prime Factor. And, you know, a horse like Tarantino, who showed speed in the Holy Bull, you know, we'll see if he goes up there as well. I just don't know if he's going to go out there and kill him, or at least try to kill him. You know, of course, Saul Kuhlman owns both those horses, so I don't think he's going to want to see both of his horses go out there and go eyeball to eyeball. So that'll be interesting. So with the, and then if you look at the top two horses, okay, if you look at Drain the Clock and Prime Factor, if they do go out there, the horse that's going to be sitting right behind them is Fire at Will. And again, we say, well, okay, he's never run on a fast dirt track. Well, you know, he won the slop. And people are going to see his pedigree and say, you know, he's the declaration of war. He's out of a kitten's joy mare. It's all grass. It's not all grass. The one thing is that people forget about declaration of war is that when you think of the Breeders' Cup that Mucho Macho Man won, and when he held off Will Take Charge to win by a nose, that's what people think about. They don't realize that a head back was declaration of war, making his dirt debut. He got beat a head in the nose in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And his first two starts of his life, he actually won in France on a synthetic surface. He had never run on the grass. And then they sent him to the United States. Looked like, you know, sent him to Todd, or Joe Allen, sent him to Todd Pletcher. Looked like he was going to be on a Triple Crown campaign, and he actually worked at Palm Meadows on the dirt. And then they sold it to Coolmore, and they sent him back to Aidan O'Brien, and he became, you know, top grass horse and won at Royal Ascot. So no reason why this horse can't handle the dirt. He's been working steadily on it. So he's going to be dangerous in here. I think he's a really nice horse, but he's going to make the first move. That's why I look at Greatest Honor, and I'm saying, you know what? If he's closing in this race, because he's coming off a race where he made some huge moves on Thoroughgraph. You know, he ran fast times. You know, he ran a one on Thoroughgraph. And so I don't mind him, like, pairing up that number or even, you know, regressing a little bit or so. So if Greatest Honor is closing in this race and can close for second or even a close third, I'll be happy with that. Because you don't want him doing anything in this race. You still got the Florida Derby to run. And you don't want him doing too much in this race, coming off as big a race as he did in the Holy Bull. So it would not hurt me one way or the other if he doesn't win. So anyway, I don't know. Anybody you like in here?
Well, I really didn't look at it much. I mean, other than, you know, just to survey the group. So I'll do some work tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, we'll see. It's some interesting horses in here, but you know, I don't know how good Tarantino is. That last start was his first start on the dirt. He got a first time gelding in here, who was claimed his last start, and he's gelded at Tis Tac Toe. But you know, I mean, these horses shouldn't beat the top horses in here. The top four horses in here look like they're standouts.
Agreed.
But like I said, the key is Drain the Clock. If he's got a five-length lead, you know, he's going to be very tough. The key is going to be prime factor if he goes with him.
Shift over, Steve, and let's take a look at Southwest. And I was a little surprised that there that I suppose with the Risen Star just a couple of weeks away and more points and money, not that 750 wasn't enough money to be involved in. I was a little surprised.
It was enough to attract Baffert. Baffert's not going to let a $750,000 race at Oakland go by.
No.
But again, it shows you what I said before. There was no 3-year-olds at Oaklawn. I mean, a lot of good horses were pointing for Oaklawn races, but they weren't stable there. Yeah, Keep Me in Mind was stable there, and Caddo River was stable there, and he left. So there's really nobody left there, and everything got messed up with this race. And like you said, you know, you had the Risen Star last week. I wonder if they wish they had run in the Risen Star with Keep Me in Mind. Just get a race into him. But, you know, I mean, listen, this race, I don't know, they're predicting rain, right? So we might get it off track, which is going to, you know, after all this waiting, you wind up still not knowing anything. But, I mean, who's going to run with Jackie's Warrior here if he goes to the front? I mean, there's nobody to run with him.
That's true.
You know, I mean, the only horse that shows any, I'm not even going to call it speed, that's Saffir's Day, but that's not, that's, you know, that's really cheap speed. He's not really a front runner. He crawled on a lead at Oakland on his last start. But I mean, Jackie's Warrior, he must be busting out of his skin right now waiting for this race. You know, people forget that, you know, he had back-to-back Bullet Works, you know, back in early February, pointing for this race. So Asmussen has, you know, just basically slowed him down a little bit to go into this race. But I mean, if this is anywhere near the horse we saw in the Champagne, I mean, I don't know who's going to be anywhere near him. So again, a sense of quality certainly doesn't have. If Jackie's Warrior gets out there and opens a big lead and sets it and controls the race, if a sense of quality runs second to him, that's fine. I just want to see how he makes the transition from two to three. I'm not looking for anything huge from him. Just want to see how he handles it. He's been working very sharp at Fairgrounds. He's been working steady 5 furlongs, and he said set a 6-furlong race, but all of it, he hasn't worked anything under 5 furlongs in a long time. So, you know, breaking from the rails, as long as he doesn't get into trouble and sits back, and if Jackie's Warrior steals it, he steals it. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, as far as the other horses go, I don't know. Again, Spielberg, you know, Baffert, he's a good horse, but he was never, you know, in Baffert's top three. But he's a good, solid horse, and he'll win his share of races. But I don't know how seriously you take him in here. I mean, can he win? I guess so. But I'm not going to love him in here.
No, he's a not, cut
you know,
beneath.
He's not fast.
No.
You know. One kind of interesting horse in there, only because of the trainer. You look at Santa Cruiser, and it seems like everybody loved him in the Risen Star. I wasn't that crazy about him going in there, and he didn't do anything. But you look at his three races at Churchill Downs, and he's like a totally different horse from the two races at Fairgrounds. And granted, Churchill Downs were all maiden races, and Fairgrounds were all stakes races. So you figure, well, maybe he's just not good, or maybe he just doesn't like Fairgrounds, which is possible. And the fact that DeSormo is running him back in 2 weeks off the Risen Star leads me to believe that he feels like he just didn't do any running, he just didn't handle the racetrack. And why not? Bring him back. Bring him to a new racetrack. See how he handles this. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, he was a horse who was developing. You know, he finished third in his first start, then second, then he broke his maiden. So, no, we have no idea how good this horse is if he indeed hated Fairgrounds, which is possible. Some horses just don't like Fairgrounds. You know, and then if it does come up muddy, you know, you got a horse, this horse Woodhouse. Again, I have no clue how good he is at all. He's only run twice. You know, he broke his maiden at Remington Park, and he ran a good race. He was, you know, tight finish for third in the mud. at Oaklawn last time out in an allowance race, you know, in a very, very deep, deep racetrack. But, you know, he's not going to be the horse like Jackie's Warrior, in a sense of quality, you know, or even Spielberg. But again, there's not much depth here. I mean, this is, you know, to me, it's Jackie's Warrior and a sense of quality. Those are the two horses in here. I don't see anybody else in here.
I'm excited for C.R. Trout to run Woodhouse in this spot. And that dam, that magical dream, she was an unraced filly that's a sister to Dream Rush.
I mean, he could be a nice horse. I just don't know if he's ready for these kind of horses. That's the whole thing. Yeah, his last start, the horse that beat him, Twilight Blue, was a good horse. So we'll see. He's the kind of horse, by the way. If he picks up a piece of it here,
yeah,
you know, then you got to take him seriously. He's the son of Spikestown, so I don't know how far he wants to go. The question is, which Woodhouse is he named after?
So that's many a good question.
That he could be named.
That's true. That's true. Well, the Sam Henderson, the owner. That's a good question.
Yeah. So it depends on which way you're looking, which sport you're looking at here.
That's funny.
You know, but I just want to see a sense of quality, and I want to see if Jackie's Warrior looks like a Derby horse. I actually didn't mind his race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at all.
He ran hard. Yeah, He ran great.
Exactly. So a lot of people just say knock him. The main thing is that, you know, he showed that a horse could outrun him, but the horse that did outrun him actually was a rabbit put in there strictly to kill him, and the rabbit actually didn't run that badly, but
no.
The rabbit was put in there to kill him for Keep Me in Mind, to set it up for Keep Me in Mind. And I mean, they just tore out there. They go, you know, 22-2, 45-1, and he couldn't get the lead. And you know, once he did, all Rosario could do was just get him to try and settle. And it was good that he did settle in there, and he hung in there in the stretch. I mean, he was right there. You know, at the 16th pole, he was right there, and he got tired late. But he was like, "Yeah, we only got beat 3 1/4 lengths, all things considered." So I'm curious to see what happens there. I mean, you figure they got to go to the lead with him, even though you want to rate him if you're looking at Derby horse, but if you're your only speed like this, you got to take advantage of it. I mean, you can't just sit back and sit behind some slow pace or so. So I got to think that they're going to go, especially if it comes up off track. They've got to go to the lead with him. And like I said, his race in the Champagne was just spectacular. I thought, and even his race in the Hopeful, he just runs. He's just fast. Just look at his times in there. 109-3 in the Saratoga Special, 21-1 in the Hopeful, even the 35-2. That wasn't a very fast track for the Champagne. And wins going away. You know, he beats, you know, Reinvestment Risk and Midnight Bourbon. He beat good horses in there. So the whole key is the two turns. We'll see how he handles it. But I'd love to see him look like a Derby horse. Again, the McLean's Music, you always think of speed, 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 but he did sire a Preakness winner. So you just don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he runs. I would just hate to see both those horses, him and Drain the Clock, just go out to the lead and look like just sprinters that just outrun their field on the front end, and then you're still in the dark as far as the Derby. You're saying, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know where did this race go for the Derby. You got to start looking at how the runners up did, see how Essential Quality and Greatest Honor do, how they looked. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting what happens, and then I'll set it up for next week when you got three big, big races. By the way, there's also an allowance race that everybody should look at. There's an allowance race tomorrow at Gulfstream. And there are several horses in here that are very interesting. One of them was the horse that I've had on top in my top 12 until his last start. His Known Agenda, who I was very high on, and who actually beat Greatest Honor in a tremendous, tremendous stretch drive going 1 1/8 at Aqueduct. And when we ran into Remsen, he was third, beat 9 lengths in the slop, but he actually detested the slop. I had mentioned that Johnny Velasquez was whipping him on the backstretch. He just couldn't handle it. And then for some strange reason, his last start, Sam Davis, he just took himself out of the race. He was running in the back of the pack. He's like 10 lengths off the pace. He's running 10th in a 12-horse field. Saying, what the heck is this? And then he decided to run in the last eighth of a mile. He makes up like 8 lengths or so in the last eighth of a mile and gets beat 4 lengths. So Plutch is pulling out all stops here. He's putting blinkers on, giving them Lasix. In fact, he got 4 horses in this race that are running on Lasix for the first time. You know, which brings up a very interesting dilemma for this year's Derby Trail.
Mm-hmm.
All these horses, you know, that are racing, they're racing big without Lasix. You know, let's say Known Agenda wins this race. Was it because of Lasix or was it because of the blinkers? Because the next race, he's going to obviously go like in the Florida Derby or something if he wins this race. And how is he going to do coming off of Lasix? I've said that about several horses. How are they going to do coming off of Lasix? You know, the great one is a horse. Got Lasix, he wins by 14 lengths. How is he going to do coming off of Lasix? You just don't know. That's the dilemma this year. Everybody in this race here is going on Lasix because they want to win this race. Then they'll worry about coming off Lasix
right
afterwards. But, you know, Pletch's other horse, Amount, who was very impressive breaking his maiden, I thought it was going to be a really good horse, and he was eased in his last start. And he, you know, looked terrible. He quarter pole, he was already being pulled up. Now he goes on Lasix. So there's a possibility. I've been trying to find out one way or the other. But he looks like he might have definitely bled in that race. So I don't know what to expect here. Let's say this horse comes back and wins again with Lasix. And if he did bleed in the second start, well, then what happens? What happens when you start putting him in a stakes race, coming back off Lasix again? A lot of question marks this year with all this Lasix back and forth. And you know, you want points. You got to run without the Lasix, but these two Pletcher horses definitely worth keeping an eye on to see how they run. Kenny McPeak's got a horse who won his last start back in the fall at Churchill Downs, and he's getting Lasix. You know, if he runs in the spot, he's also entered at Turfway. So a lot of questions, a lot of dilemmas, a lot of different ways to go.
And then
you got Soup and Sandwich, who still fascinates me more than any horse I think I've seen all year.
That Top Gun Tommy had been entered in the race yesterday against Soup and Sandwich. And Kelly Breen scratched out of that to. You know, to stay on the East Coast.
That was another thing too. By the way, here he is as a 1-5 favorite in the 3-horse field, and he's totally boxed in the whole length of the backstretch.
I know, which is good.
What you doing?
Which
in
is good.
3-horse field. It's amazing how horses wind up getting in trouble in 3-horse fields. And luckily, the other horse was off the rail, and he just absolutely. Next thing you know, he's got a 3-length lead. He just comes through on the rail. With the jock not even moving his hands on him, he just like cruises to the lead. But it'll be interesting. But just Top Gun Tommy, yeah, I mean, he's coming off of back-to-back wins, so we'll see what happens with him. He had actually broken his maiden, and then they gave him Lasix, and he won again. So, you know, he's obviously bred to go long. He's got stamina all through his pedigree. It'll be interesting to see how he does in here. But I'd like to talk to Mark Cassie about this horse to see what he thinks about him. Well, if you speak to Mrs. Weber, ask her.
Well, I spoke to her over the weekend. They're very excited.
They should be. Like I said, if this horse matures and you know, wakes up and grows up, gets his act together, his future is unlimited. I mean, he's got a lot of ability. Like I said, he's a very intelligent horse. I mean, he's just like curious, looking around at everything. You got to break him of that habit in a race, but it's not affecting him, no matter what he does. the ducking in, gawking at things, and he still wins like a champion.
Well, it's not affecting him in a, you know, against two horses. It's a different story when you start putting 8, 10, 12
horses. No, I said so
horses,
far. Yeah, it's not, it hasn't affected him so far. I'm not saying that it's not affecting him as a Derby horse. We don't know that yet. But, you know, just going by the visual, if he wants to be a Derby horse, he's got to get more professional. Let's put it that way. He can't do these things. Plus, in both of his races, he comes out of the gate and he breaks to the inside in both of his races. But in the last race, there's three horses. And, you know, he's in third, and the horse in front is still, like a length and a half, two lengths in front of him. And he starts to ease in a little bit, and this horse sees him, and he just throws his head up in the air like he got intimidated by him or something. So it's just one thing after another with him. But he does look like he's got a lot of ability. Strange name, but it's kind of interesting.
Well, Charlotte's beating the bushes for various soup connotations. So it's
yeah. I guess you didn't want to name him Soup Nazi.
No,
but how about no? How about no soup for you?
No soup for you. Fine. You know, Steve. Actually, you know, you mentioned. I'm glad you mentioned the cross entry regarding McPeak, and. And Warrior in Chief, because there is the Battaglia, and with the money that's involved for the Ruby, this drew an interesting field tomorrow night.
Yeah, there's some, you know, again, there's some nice horses here. We just don't know much about them, and even after this race, no matter what they do, we're not going to know much about them. But you know, I know they were high on Gretzky the Great. He had looked really, really good on the turf. And in his last start, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile turf, you know, he showed speed, and he got tired in that race, coming off of Lasix, mind you. So we'll see what he does here. You know, he's had a lot of time to get over that race. But again, you know, when these horses win this race, you still don't know how they're going to handle the dirt.
Right.
Yeah, Wesley Ward's horse. They put him on the synthetic in his last start, and he was very impressive. Like the King, you know, coming off the grass. But I don't know; it's a big field. You know, anybody can win this race. We just don't know how good they are. You know, this Brad Cox. Brad Cox, of course, has a horse. Got a horse in there for Robert LaPenta. And I don't know, this Kinetic Sky, you know, he's coming from Fairgrounds, you know, in an off-the-turf race that he won impressively, and he goes on to the synthetic for the first time. Speaking of LaPenta, by the way, he's got, just to throw this, a name out for you, by the way, he's got a New York bred named Vinny DeVest, named after
the one mistake the other day.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but a lot of people don't know about it because it's a New York bred stake. But I tell you, you watch this horse run, this horse is the real deal. This horse, like Tis the Law, he's a New York bred name only. I mean, his pedigree is spectacular. But you watch this horse, he's flawless. He does nothing wrong. He's got the most beautiful stride, runs straight as an arrow, great mechanics. Everything about him, he looks like the real deal. So I'm... It looks like right now they're going to go to the Gotham, or they might wait for the Wood, which I wouldn't be too crazy about. You know, he's only run the two times. But if he runs in the Gotham, that'll make things interesting. I think he's a really, really good horse.
Yeah, he ran away from that field, and
he does it so effortlessly. I mean, he just does everything effortlessly. And he doesn't do anything wrong in a race. Like I said, his mechanics are flawless. You know, he's well balanced, never deviates off his path at all. I mean, he's an absolute pro. And again, you know, he's beaten New York breds, but you know, he's been beating decent horses. But listen, I said the same thing earlier about, you know, Tis the Law. You know, forget about the fact that he was running against New York breds. The way he did it, and you look at his pedigree. Like I said, his pedigree is just. excellent, excellent pedigree. It's all Kentucky bred. So he's a New York bred in name only. But that's a name definitely to watch. If he goes into Gotham, which could be an absolute monstrosity of a race, there could be some really good horses in there. But watch out for Vinny the Vest. Sounds like
Nick the Vest.
Sounds like a character from Guys and Dolls.
Nick.
Nicky. I mean, Nicky yeah. the Vest, not Vinny the Vest. Nicky the Vest. Yeah. Trudley's a real, he's supposed to be a real character. He's like makes the martinis at the Rayos.
Yeah, he's the bartender at the at Rayos.
So there's some interesting horses coming up, but it's all these horses coming up have got to get up. There's no more coming up anymore. We're getting too late. We're almost into March. So you better establish yourself right now as a Derby horse.
True. That's why this group tomorrow at Gulfstream. I'm glad you brought that race up because that would have slipped through the cracks. So that,
Known Agenda. Like I said, if Known Agenda wins that race impressively, he's a good horse.
It's easy to forgive.
Definitely put him back in as a serious contender.
Yeah, well, it's easy to forgive.
That it was the Blinkers that did it, not the Lasiks.
Well, and Tampa. I mean,
You never know.
Tampa's a funny place, and you know it's not like he didn't engage. I mean, eventually he, you know, after languishing, he came with that late rush.
And it takes a it sometimes
exactly.
it takes a while to get used to the track, even within the race.
Yep.
So they can go a mile, three quarters of a mile or so, and just decide, no, exactly. All right, I'll start running now. The horses take time to get used to a track. So maybe he just didn't like it, but he was flying at the end. But part of that was also because that they were crawling at the end. The horses up front were getting really, really tired. So you don't know if that was the case or whether he was actually just finding his best drive. But, I mean, he made up over 8 lengths in the last eighth of a mile. He was really moving. So if he's impressive in this race tomorrow, then I got to start thinking of him again. I had him like ranked number 7 or 8 for a couple of weeks. That's how high I was on that horse. I love his pedigree. His pedigree is European, one of the greatest sire lines in Europe. You find all these classic winners. Darshan, or the whole Millreaf line. So we'll say he's certainly bred to run all day, and I'll see how that amount does. Both those horses are run, owned by Vinny Viola. One of them in partnership with Rapoli, but it'll be interesting.
Well, Steve, we got we'll be kept busy between the big card at Gulfstream, culminating with the Fountain, and you got this allowance. Friday night, you got the Battaglia, and at Oaklawn, the Southwest, and we got champions coming back like Monomoy Girl and Vquist, and there's going to be a good. As we're kind of easing into. It's almost March. We'll call this weekend, the wrapping up.
About
of February.
As close to March as you can get.
Exactly. So, and then the big week next week. So.
Yeah.
Secretariat.com.
If you find anything juicy out about soup and sandwich, let me know.
I will. I'm recommending tomato bisque and grilled cheese as the
can't go wrong with that.
No, that's the classic pairing. Steve asking everybody.
If you get your stuff, by the way, don't put it in a paper bag.
Oh, you saw my paper bag shtick.
Yeah,
I got to tell you.
Were those Honey Nut Cheerios in there?
Those were Honey Nut Cheerios.
I see how observant I am.
I'm happy to use the plastic bags and the paper bags. There's days where I forget my you got to bring your own you got to bring your own bags into the store, which is fine. There's days, though, where I leave them in the house and then I forget to put them back in the car. And so you get to the grocery store and you don't have the bag. So I put this up last night because I reach for the camera. The bag rips out of my hand and breaks, and I'm staring at it, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. When we were kids, and that's why I wrote it the way I did, when we were kids, the grocery bag, you'd come home, you'd take the grocery out, then you'd fold the thing up, and there was like 7,000 things to do with it. You'd make it into book covers. There would be school projects with it. These bags, they're like tissue paper, and they're charging you a nickel for them.
I know. I can't tell you how many times I made book covers from those bags.
Of course.
You're cutting them up, and then you fold them, you slip them into the edges there, and then you label it, and then next thing you know, you're doodling all over it. You're doodling all over the back and the front of it. But, I mean, God knows how many nights I spent using those, to wrap my books in.
I know.
But, the paper bags are terrible now. You always have to double them. It's always to say you want a double bag.
I, the thing to do is make sure you bring your own, your own grocery sack into the store. That's like that was like the third one that, and maybe the winter is contributing, maybe because it's cold out. I don't know. They're more brittle. I have no idea, but it's somebody. So I got some very interesting responses to that. Somebody talked about how it's all recycled paper, and so it's not as it doesn't have as much strength.
Talking about Facebook, no matter what you post on Facebook, by the way, you're going to get 100 people commenting on it, no matter how trivial it might be.
Well, I did this tongue in cheek because I thought people would be amused, and they clearly were. So, Steve, I got Rich Eng coming. He's on the line. But I did you see the picture that Sue Finley put up from TDN?
On what?
It's a picture of the jocks room at Aqueduct, and there's about 18, 14 jocks, and we
spoke. Oh, you mean the ones, identify them, you mean?
Yes,
I did see that. Yeah, they look familiar, but I couldn't put the names with a lot of them.
Well, we got quite a few done, actually. I sent it to Bill Hirsch and Mig and to Georgie Velasquez, and I think we got all but one named, there's some, and it's funny, some names that people really have forgotten about, George Tejera.
All of Daryl Montoya, Jorge Tejera, and these were all, jocks that everybody knew back then. And it was so good seeing the young Ron Turcotte sitting there.
Exactly, and a bug boy. The bug boy sitting next to Turcotte is Kevin Whitley, who went
oh,
on
God,
to win.
Oh, God, I remember him, yes.
He won 3,300 races in his career.
Kevin Whitley, I definitely remember him. Again, as a librarian at the time, by the way, I used to get the photos in of all these young riders and all these, I'd have to file them. So their faces are implanted in my brain. Obviously, not quite. There's still a lot of those riders I didn't recognize.
Well, and Jimmy Miranda was one that Georgie that nobody had gotten.
Yeah, he used to ride for Tartan Stable, Jimmy Miranda.
Now this is kind of fun, and Mig was even able to identify the guys, the valets that are in the background too. Mig is right on top of it. Cliff Garvey and Billy Gilbert. And actually, it also, when I looked up some of the jocks and some of their big mounts, it also gave me more ideas for my horses that Time Forgot, that we're gonna do that series. And I've got a New York bred named Packett's Landing that people probably don't remember. That was a really good hard hitting.
Yeah, I remember.
Gander type. Steve Haskin, I appreciate it. Let me get Rich Eng in here for 10 minutes.
All righty. You take care.
Steve Haskin, everybody. Secretariat.com. Rich Eng, standing by.
Hey, good morning, Steve. You know, I missed that photo. I would love to see that photo because some of those jockeys were definitely riding when I started in New York back in 79. I mean, those are a lot of names I remember.
Well, this picture is clearly from, and I'll send you the link. I'll send you a DM with it. The link. It's on Sue Finley's feed. But this picture is from the winter of 76, based on particularly on the Bug Boy, on Kevin Whitley, because he started the year, he started his riding at that winter in New York. So it's really fun. And, you see, you know, Velasquez there and Jacinto Vasquez and, you know, Angel.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I definitely wanted to see that because, you know, when I started in 79, I knew Jimmy Miranda and Daryl Montoya and obviously all the big-name riders. And I guess Kevin won most of those races you were talking about up in Finger Lakes, I guess.
Yes, he did, exactly. And then he had, you know, he would have a couple of stake horses around New England and such that, you know, would get him, you know, to other, you know, into New York, too. And I'm just here. I'm pulling up the... I answered it. I did not like tweet it out but I will. The ones that are already identified include Daryl Montoya, Ron Turcotte, Gustines, Heliodoro Gustines, John Ruan, George Velasquez, Jean Cruguet, Angel, Ruben Hernandez, and Jose Amy.
Oh my goodness.
It's great. And then let's see, Bill Hirsch. Hirsch came up with Whitley as the bug, and Mig added Jamie Arellano. Actually, Bill Hirsch also Jamie Arellano, and Robert Pineda, which was a name that I did not know.
Wow.
and the one that Georgie just added was Jimmy Miranda that had gone unidentified.
Wow, what a group!
it's amazing actually how often these I take those pictures down in Baltimore and I send them out from the office where I broadcast by the press box and people just love it. Somebody wrote me a funny. I put out one during Preakness, and somebody said, "Didn't they have color back then?" And they did. There was color photography, but because the newspapers were all black and white, almost all those pictures, even into the 80s, are black and white.
Oh yeah, you would send them out when I was working in New York. You'd send them to the Daily News and the New York Post and the Times and Newsday, that kind of thing. Yeah, they'd want black and white. And here's a name. I know you didn't mention it, but I guess you didn't make the photo. But I was in that era was a jockey named Angel Santiago. I remember very well, but I guess he didn't make the photo.
No, and that's a new name by me too. Angel Santiago.
One of his trivia answers is I believe he was one of the first jockeys on, was it John Henry or something like that? But when you look at John Henry's long resume, you'll see Angel Santiago riding for I think Lefty Nickerson.
How about that? Well, I just pulled him up. Absolutely, he won 96,000 on John Henry, so he rode him. He rode him a few times. The horse that I should have remembered him being associated with is Cupacoy's Joy, the really nice New York bred.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was Robert. I'm trying to remember the owner and the trainer. I can picture their faces. I'm struggling with their names now.
Well, Perez. That was
Perez. Yeah.
Right. He used to bring the horses
Alfredo,
up from Chile.
Alfredo Calais.
Exactly. Good job. Good job. She was, you know, she was, you know, really, if you did a series on the early, you know, on early star New York breds, she would be up there, right? I mean, she.
You know, thing about Robert Perez was he was not afraid. Maybe Alfredo was more afraid, but Robert Perez was not afraid to run her in the toughest of spots available in New York.
She won the Mother Goose, second in the coaching club, and then she kind of tailed off. It's funny, she did not, I didn't realize this, she did not run past three. They ran her in the Jim Beam. they sent her to Latonia to run in the Jim Beam that year.
Oh, that must have been, that was probably before I went to Turfway to be the PR director then. That was because Latonia was before my time there.
Well, and that's right when I lived in Cincinnati. I think 84 was the last year, I think, right? Turfway became Turfway in 84 or 85.
Yeah, it was 85 when the Jerry Carroll and his group bought the track and renamed it. And the funny story about why it was named Turfway Park was that they spent $50,000 in doing marketing search for a new name. And the road that goes by the racetrack is called Turfway Road. And so it became Turfway Park.
Oh, that's funny because when I see the sign, it was called Turfway even before the track was renamed. That's hysterical.
The road went right by the racetrack, and that's what it ended up being named.
Well, and of course there was the potential for it to go back to the new Latonia, but they're going to stick with Turfway. And of course, last week, Rich, the HHR vote and. You know, getting this thing sealed and delivered assures a future for Turfway. But at the same time, you know, we spent the last two mornings dealing with, you know, the situation at Arlington.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame to see Arlington go by the wayside. I did spend 1 year there working for Bob Bork and Mr. Duchessois, and it's one of the most beautiful racetracks, not only in the country, maybe in the world. The architecture of the grandstand and clubhouse, the turf course, just there's so many nice things you can say about it, and it's going to be very disappointing to see it disappear from the American landscape of horse racing.
Well, don't know if this last chapter is written in stone just yet. We had Michael Campbell from The Horseman earlier, and discussed it yesterday with Marcus Hirsch and Matt Hegarty, but... I saw where you had commented a couple of different times. I mean, if you lose places like Hollywood and Bay Meadows and Rockingham and Suffolk, Calder, even, I mean, technically Hialeah, I mean, is gone from the landscape. I mean, if a track like Hialeah and Hollywood don't survive, then you know, there's nothing sacred at that point.
Yeah, it's really a shame. I remember the year that I was there, we had a very difficult Arlington Million Festival because people remember back then there was an equine herpes virus outbreak, and we had a difficult time with, you know, first we had to get it under control, and then the horses were coming in from Europe. But I'll just give Mr. Duchessois all the credit in the world. He said, spend whatever money, do whatever you have to do to get this done. You know, it was similar to how they rebuilt the Arlington right after the fire. He said, just get it done. And we were able to get it done and run a festival despite, you know, that serious illness. But we got it done and for the safety of all the horses. That was really a great achievement to get that accomplished.
Rich, before we wrap here, Naira, Turfway, Arlington, what other tracks did you work at before on the publicity side before going turf riding?
I was down at Gordon State Park when we opened up in 85 with Mr. Brennan. So I was there on the original staff, the racetrack of the 21st century. I was there. I worked at the Meadowlands and the Monmouth Park for the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority. You know, San Anita, of course. You know, and I'm trying to remember if I forgot anyone, but I've had a chance to see a lot of great racing. And you know, but the most important thing, Steve, is I got a chance to meet a lot of great people and a lot of great athletes. You know, meaning the trainers and jockeys and owners that participate in this sport. There are so many great people in this industry that's the memories that I take with me.
That's a nice. You got a little Jersey, little Illinois, New York, Kentucky. That's pretty much a survey. You caught most of the regions. Rich, we got to pull up, but we'll catch up. We got plenty of action next week. Let's focus toward that. And 3-year olds starting to come into focus.
Yeah, the 3-year races should be real interesting as we start to cook toward the Kentucky Derby. So be watching those very closely.
Richard Eng. Visit Rich, RaceDayLasVegas.com for his analysis, and Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter, and the author of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. Want to thank Mike Campbell and Dick Powell and Chris Griffin, Steve Haskin, Rich Eng today. Weekend preview, a huge weekend preview tomorrow. I hope Marty is back. I hope Marty is up to a visit because you know, he's been dealing with his eye issue, and maybe the balloon, the little bubble they put in, maybe that's dissipated so he can participate. I hope so. Mike Welch, I was texting with this morning, and Nick and Ed and James, and lots of handicapping. Hammer, Oaklawn, weekend preview at the races brought to you by Twin Spires. Good luck today if you're playing, everybody. We'll talk to you in the morning.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.